When Corey and I go on holidays, we like to go for walks. We talk about many things over the course of a holiday, dreaming about our future, and inevitably the topic of our retirement will come up. You may think we're too young to be talking about that. We've got a little way to go, but it's a topic we always talk about. It's nice to dream. And Corey says that when he retires, he would like to be by the ocean. There's something for him about the waves, looking out over the ocean, seeing the waves rolling in, that speaks to his heart. But I like the mountains. So we've got 20 years to sort it out. A little bit of time to go. Well, I have three stories to share with you today, and they're all to do with mountains. Near the beginning of the Bible, in Exodus chapter 33, Moses was leading his people through the desert. And when they got to Mount Sinai, Moses climbed the mountain to talk with God. And what did they talk about? Well, they talked about the people. How was this ragtag group of former slaves ever going to become the people of God? And at the top of that mountain, God spoke to Moses, and he said, "These people, they're my treasured possession. I love them, and I want them to live like a holy nation, like a kingdom of priests." And then Moses went down the mountain, and he told the people what God had said. And they were all on board. The people said, "That's great. That sounds good to us." And then Moses went up the mountain again, and he told God what the people had said. And then it's up and down the mountain, over and over again, working out the finer details of how this covenant is going to work. Moses was their intermediary. He was their intercessor between God and the people, brokering this deal, if you like. And at last, Moses went up the mountain again with God, and they're putting the final touches to this covenant between God and the people. But then all of a sudden, God says, "Moses, quickly, you've got to get down there. These people who you have said are with me, they're not with me. In fact, they've turned away from me, and I'm angry. I'm angry." And Moses listened to God, and then he pleaded with God on behalf of the people. He said to God, "Please don't kill them. Please don't hurt them. Please remember how much you love them." And God listened to Moses, and he agreed with him. And he said, I'm not going to kill them. I'm not going to hurt them. And then Moses went down the mountain again. But when Moses saw what the people were doing, what they had done and how they were living, he became angry. They were a perverse and unbelieving people. And in his anger, Moses went to the religious people, the priests, and he said to them, "Here's what I want you to do. I want you to take your swords and I want you to run through the camp." And they killed more than 3,000 people on that day, neighbors and brothers and friends. And the next day, with a heavy heart, Moses climbed the mountain again. And as he climbed that mountain, I imagine he would have done a lot of thinking. And something must have changed in his mind. Because when he spoke to God, here's what he said. He said, "Oh God, people have sinned against you in a huge way. They've made gods for themselves out of gold. But now, could you just forgive them? Could you forgive them of their sin? But if you can't, if you're not willing to do that, could you take my life instead of theirs? For Moses, something had changed. Yesterday, he'd had them killed. But today, he's pleading for their lives and offering his own life for their sake. Well, God wouldn't take the life of Moses, and he wouldn't take the lives of the people. And from then on, the Bible tells us that God and Moses spoke with one another face to face as one would speak to a friend. There was a much better understanding between them now. And Moses went up the mountain one more time, because God had asked him to lead the people. But Moses now knew what he was capable of. And so he knew that this was going to be a difficult task for him. He knew that he needed God to be with him. And so he interceded for the people again. God, don't forget that these are your people. They're your responsibility. You need to let me in on what you're doing here. I'm not getting it. I'm not understanding it. You need to let me in on what your plans are. In fact, if you don't come with me, if you don't come with us, then we should just call this whole thing off. And so God promised that he would be with them. But Moses wanted more, and so he said, please, let me see your glory. Let me see your glory. And God said, I will make my glory, my goodness, pass right in front of you. But Moses, know this, that I will show mercy to whoever I like, and I will show kindness to whoever I like. And then he said to Moses, look, here's a place right beside me. Put yourself on this rock, and when my glory passes by, I will put you in the cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand to protect you until I've passed by. And then I'll take my hand away, and you will see my back, but you won't see my face, because that would be too much for you. And that's what happened. Moses saw God's glory, the overwhelming goodness of God. And about 600 years later, the prophet Elijah was still dealing with the people of Israel, and they were a perverse and unbelieving generation. The government had turned away from God, and they were running after other gods, the Baals. So Elijah went to the king and he said, let's all go to the mountain. So the people all gathered around the base of the mountain. And Elijah said to the people, you can't sit on the fence anymore. Once and for all, you have to decide if you are with God or if you're going to follow Baal. And everyone was silent. So he said to the prophets of Baal, lay an ox on the altar, but don't set it alight. Then pray to your gods. And I'll lay an ox on the altar, and I'll pray to my God, and let's see which altar is set alight. Then we'll know who is the one true God. So the prophets of Baal took an ox, and they laid it on the altar, and then they prayed to Baal. O Baal, answer us, come and burn up this offering. And they prayed over and over all morning. shouting at the tops of their voices, but nothing happened. There was not the slightest breeze. And they were so desperate that they worked themselves up into a frenzy and they cut themselves until they were bleeding and stomped all over their altar. And at midday, Elijah started mocking them. He started taunting them. He said, "Why don't you shout a little louder? Your gods obviously can't hear you. Maybe they've got something else today, or maybe they've gone on holidays, or maybe they've slept in. Why don't you shout louder to wake them up?" So the prophets of Baal prayed louder and louder and became severely distressed and bloodied. In fact, they were covered with blood, but Elijah did not relent. He kept on and on and on at them. But no matter what the prophets did, nothing happened. There was not even a whisper. Then Elijah told the people, "Enough. It's my turn. Everyone gather around." He was preparing for a great spectacle. And he put the altar back together and he dug a wide trench around it. And he laid firewood on the altar and cut up the ox and laid it on the altar. And he drenched the whole thing with water, not once, not twice, but three times. It was quite a show that he put on. And when it was time for the sacrifice to be offered, Elijah prayed, "O God, reveal to these your people that you are the one true God and that you're giving them a chance to repent." And straight away, fire from heaven fell and the whole thing was consumed, including the water. It was an awesome display. And when the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they worshipped God. Elijah got what he wanted. But then this, he turned to those people, the very people who had just been worshipping God, and he said to them, "Grab the prophets of Baal. Don't let them get away." So they grabbed them and they took them down to the river and they massacred them. And when the queen heard what had happened to the prophets of Baal, she swore that she would kill Elijah. And so Elijah went up the mountain. He went up the mountain to pray. And God spoke to him and said, "Elijah, what are you doing here?" And Elijah poured out his heart to God. "God, I've been working so hard for you. But these people of Israel, they are a perverse and unbelieving people. And they've murdered all your prophets. And now they want to kill me too." And God said to him, "Elijah, go and stand on the mountain and God will pass by." And this is what happened. A huge hurricane whipped through the mountains and shattered all of the rocks. But God was not in the wind. And after the wind, there was an enormous earthquake that shook the whole earth. But God was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, there was a ferocious fire, but God wasn't in the fire. And then after the fire, after all of that awesome spectacle, there was a gentle and quiet whisper. And when Elijah heard that quiet voice, he pulled his cloak over his face and he went and stood at the mouth of the cave. And the voice spoke again. "So Elijah, now tell me, what are you doing here?" And Elijah said it again. the people have abandoned you. And I've been working my heart out for you. They've murdered all of your prophets, and I'm the only one left. And now they want to kill me too. And here's what God said to him. Go back down the mountain. Go back the way that you've come. Why do I tell you all of that today when we're thinking about the transfiguration? Because on that day of transfiguration that we read about in Luke, Jesus went up a mountain. A man went up a mountain with his friends, and he was somehow transformed. The appearance of his face changed, and he was bright as lightning. And for the disciples looking on, it was strange because they could see that he was truly and properly God and truly and properly man. And then as the disciples looked, there were two other men on either side of Jesus, Moses and Elijah. And those two, as we know, had been up and down mountains before. But on this occasion, they stood on the mountaintop with Jesus. And then in verse 31, we're going to look at the scripture in a little bit. But in verse 31, and I think this is the crux of the whole passage, together with Jesus, they talked over his exodus, how he would leave the earth and everything that would happen to him in Jerusalem. Wouldn't you love to be in on that conversation? For Moses, who had pleaded with God, let me in on what you're doing. Let me know what you're up to. I need to see your plan. What a moment that must have been. And for Elijah, who had struggled to know how to do the will of God, to hear once and for all where it was all going and how it was going to be done and how it would be different this time. We don't know what Jesus said, but we can imagine. My friends, I'm going to go down the mountain, and I know that when I go down there that I'm not going to like what I see. I'm not going to like what I find there, but I'm going to love them, and I'm going to give my life for them. I'm going to give myself to them. And later I'm going to climb another mountain. And again, there will be one on my left and one on my right. And for all of their sakes, I'll give my life. I think we're going to pause and watch the scripture.
About 8 days after Jesus said this, he took Peter, John, and James with him and went up onto a mountain to pray. As he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became as bright as a flash of lightning. Two men, Moses and Elijah, appeared in glorious splendor, talking with Jesus. They spoke about his departure, which he was about to bring to fulfillment at Jerusalem. Peter and his companions were very sleepy, but when they became fully awake, they saw his glory and the two men standing with him. As the men were leaving Jesus, Peter said to him, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what he was saying. While he was speaking, a cloud appeared and covered them, and they were afraid as they entered the cloud. A voice came from the cloud saying, "This is my son, whom I have chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, they found that Jesus was alone. The disciples kept this to themselves and did not tell anyone at that time what they had seen. The next day, when they came down from the mountain, a large crowd met him. A man in the crowd called out, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son, for he is my only child." A spirit seizes him, and he suddenly screams. It throws him into convulsions, so that he foams at the mouth. It scarcely ever leaves him, and is destroying him. I begged your disciples to drive it out, but they could not. "You unbelieving and perverse generation," Jesus replied. "How long shall I stay with you and put up with you? Bring your son here." Even while the boy was coming, the demon threw him to the ground in a convulsion. But Jesus rebuked the impure spirit, healed the boy, and gave him back to his father. And they were all amazed at the greatness of God. While everyone was marveling at all that Jesus did, he said to his disciples, "Listen carefully to what I'm about to tell you. The Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men." But they did not understand what this meant. It was hidden from them, so that they did not grasp it, and they were afraid to ask him about it.
I don't know if you picked it up from that video, but despite all of the bright light at the top of the mountains, the disciples had fallen asleep. But when they saw what was going on there, they wanted to stay there. But Jesus led them down the mountain. And as expected, he didn't like what he found there. "You unbelieving and perverse generation." But despite everything that he saw, he looked at the suffering child in front of him, and he brought life and love and healing. How can we respond to this today? Well, maybe you're feeling a little bit like Moses, and you look out at the world and all the crazy things that seem to be going on, and you're saying, "I don't understand what is happening. I can't get a handle what's going on. God, if you've got a plan, would you just let me in on it so that I know what you're about? Will you reveal just a little bit of yourself to me? Will you let me see your glory?" And I believe that when we ask that he will do that, that the secrets of the kingdom of heaven are available to anyone who will follow Jesus. If the stories about Moses and Elijah teach us anything, it's that we're in great need of God, isn't it? Aren't we? We need God as humans. Our tendency is towards death and destruction. There was wisdom in what Moses said. "I'm not going from this place if you don't go with me. I'm not going down from here to be with those people without you. Unless you come down from this mountain with me and be with me, be with us, I'm not going." And fortunately, we have a God who is willing to do just that. He came down from earth to heaven, who is God and Lord of all. That's his modus operandi coming down is his great big plan. And as humans, we have ups and downs, don't we? As Christians, we have ups and we have downs. Moses and Elijah had ups and downs. And here's the thing. Jesus has shown us how to behave, what to do, how to live when we're down. When we're down, we do what he did. We give life. At the beginning of our time together, we said, let's go up the mountain together. And if we've entered into worship today, then that's where we have been. But very soon, we'll be going down again. But we'll be going down again with our friend Jesus by our side. But before we do that, there's time. In the same way that God made space for Elijah on the mountain, there's time just for a moment to be still and to be with him.